The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. What makes them industry giants? Get ready to take a peek inside and learn their secrets of success. This is Silicon Valley Insider, the show that demystifies the Valley and helps to elevate your business to the next level. Now, your hosts for Silicon Valley Insider, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo, and with my co-host, Jonathan Ziegler. Today, we're going to discuss a lot about what goes into thinking, considering, at a holistic level, blockchain technologies. And we're going to do that through speaking with our guest, Arnie Markoff, who's an industry veteran. And we're going to go through the vetting process that investors and people who want to jump into company, any technology company, what they go through to think about how they spend their time. We're also going to talk about smart contracts and utility tokens, which is a big part of blockchain. People usually think about Bitcoin when they think of blockchain, but Bitcoin is just one aspect of what the potential for blockchain is. And then lastly, we're going to go over crowd sales in relation to blockchain. So in the news today, just as recently as this morning, is that the U.S. has decided or declared that North Korea is behind the WannaCry virus from a few months back. And just to give the recollection of what that was, it was exploiting by hackers a way to get into computer systems that had not been patched, meaning they had not been upgraded.
So, Keith, when you talk about this, you had mentioned when we talked about this a couple months back on one of our previous shows that the WannaCry virus affected only a specific set of computers and healthcare. Isn't that right?
Yeah. To really dive a little bit deeper into what you're asking, Jonathan, is that even a couple of years ago, hackers had found or hacked some alleged government tools used for hacking at a kind of an industrial level. Mm-hmm. So the hackers took these tools and then exploited really old systems of software. So if you think about Windows, and ever since Windows got started, it's like a 30-year-old operating system. Well, when WannaCry came out, the what made the news was that it hit hospitals in the United Kingdom and it hit ATMs in China. Mm. And that's because both were still running Windows XP, which is, you know, now a 17-year-old operating system.
Wow, 17-year-olds. Okay, so the specific group that was hit was actually targeted based on the operating system.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Right. So anyway, why this article is interesting is it just tells you how long it takes for a group to confirm exactly how things happen, and I don't know if they'll ever be 100% certain.
Right,
but they're very they believe that the North Koreans were behind it.
Okay.
You had a story that we were talking about earlier around blockchain mining and that kind of a hack.
Yeah, we were kind of kidding about it when we were talking about SETI a couple of shows back, where we were saying that, you know, just like grid computing, it's a really intriguing consideration to have idle CPU time used for different avenues for research. And in this particular case, because of the theme for today with blockchain and Bitcoin and such, a customer in Starbucks literally accused Starbucks and actually had printed and tweeted a screenshot, accused Starbucks of their Wi-Fi actually capturing and using his computer to help mine Bitcoin through, it looks like, CoinHive. So what the quote was not so free Wi-Fi from Starbucks, because apparently there was a 10-second lag on between the time the gentleman registered and the Wi-Fi connected. And in that 10-second lag, he was able to go back to his register and take a picture of the screenshot. And literally, there is a script running a secure line for CoinHive. So for 10 seconds, his computer was commandeered by somebody, and Starbucks, of course, declined to acknowledge that there was a problem, but they've changed their security protocol. But it's just very interesting, and apparently over 100 people responded to his tweet complaining of the similar situation. And this was just last week.
Yeah, and so this is really funny because in our episode where we risk management, it's not optional, we were joking about this. We were talking about SETI, and we actually said, you know, what if a system administrator at a company like HP had decided to turn all the machines that they're managing, so these are thousands and thousands of servers, and decided to mine Bitcoin. Yeah. Well, remember, Bitcoin, because of its advanced stage in the life cycle of mining, and we talked about mining during also an earlier show off the blockchain with Park and DeBodge, we talked about how cryptocurrency, blockchain, a lot of it relies on the ability to mine coin, which we'll talk about a little bit later with Arnie. And so you need supercomputers now to do Bitcoin. But for newer, more nascent blockchains, you can literally use computers connected to Wi-Fi because it just doesn't require that much computing power.
Right, and that's kind of one of the changes that's coming about with some of the other players in the blockchain realm.
Yep. Yeah. So the last item of interesting news for today is that there's a Japanese company called GMO Internet, and they're a multi-billion dollar Japanese technology firm. They have announced that they're going to pay all their 4,700 employees in Bitcoin.
Okay, so it is 4,700 employees. I made the joke earlier when we were reviewing this information that it was probably only four that were going to get paid in Bitcoin, right? But it sounds like it's the whole company.
Yeah, well, also, this whole company is investing a lot overall in...
They're in the game.
They're investing a lot into blockchain. They've set up an exchange in last May. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I think, yeah, they're in essence creating their own market.
Yeah.
But it's just really interesting that they would take the step to go forth and pay their employees in fractional Bitcoin.
So I'm wondering how that impacts the day-to-day life of the average employee today. I'm assuming from the research that you've done already on this, Keith, that there may be in ins and outs in this in terms of how an employee can then turn around and use the Bitcoin, especially in Japan, because I'm sure in some of the countries that are further along in the process, so to speak, that there's more that they can buy. Like I made the joke about not being able to buy a piece of pizza with Bitcoin yet in the United States. But somebody was saying that, yeah, but you could lease your apartment.
Yes.
So that's a differentiator.
No, buy. Somebody had listed their apartment for 33 Bitcoin.
Right. Okay. So that's that. Okay. To buy the actual apartment.
Right.
Okay. So thinking about that, how does that particular situation with GMO Internet in Japan impact the day-to-day life of say, the rank and file employee, if at least from our perspective?
From our perspective, I mean, it's going to be by jurisdiction and country. So in this case, there's a company that set up an exchange, and then they are offering to pay their employees in Bitcoin. So I don't think it's much effect at all for the time being. They get to trade in that Bitcoin. I think their subject, though, how it would be effective is right now we've only seen the stratospheric rise of the value of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. What happens if it falls?
Right. And speaking of that stratospheric rise, I noticed that the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the CME Group, just started listing the day-to-day reference price, or what they're calling, it's actually the BRR, the Bitcoin Reference Rate, or the BRTI, which is the Bitcoin Real-Time Index. And so they have both listed. So, you know, just as an example, right now as of today, it's actually wrapping up an $18,000 number plus.
So one other thing that is coming up in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, is that we are the media partner for the Programmatic World Forum, and they are innovators and disruptors in advertising. That is going to be on Thursday, January 25th in San Francisco. And if you want more information on that, just come to our site, svin.biz, and enter the promo code of SVIN20 for a 20% discount.
So are they going to go to svin.biz and have the link directly? I just want to confirm.
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so when we come back, we're going to actually bring Arnie Markoff on and have a brief discussion with him about the ins and outs of what it takes to begin vetting an investment situation with both financial and time considerations, as well as talking to Arnie about his involvement with a couple of startups around blockchain and the related exchanges out there. We'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider with your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. Today's show, we're talking a lot about blockchain again, but specifically about what do investors or industry veterans think about when they're going to kind of dip their toe in the technology and the companies supporting that. We're going to talk about smart contracts and utility tokens as well as crowd sales. And with us today, we have Arnie Markov.
So let me introduce Arnie. Keith, Arnie's got over 20 years of both living and selling in Silicon Valley. He's successfully exited from two really strong companies in the technology space. He's also got big company experience for quite a few years. And today he sits on the boards of three blockchain-related technology companies that are starting up here in Silicon Valley. And I've known Arnie for a number of years. I've sold side by side against and with him. So Arnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Keith.
So, Arnie, we were talking about in the first segment how you kind of get to pick and choose the projects you work on. Blockchain is a very interesting technology. I think we are still trying to help educate people on what that's all about. We did a show earlier off the blockchain with Parkin Dabaj. We hit the ground running with what blockchain is and how it differentiated between Bitcoin and Ethereum. We talked about mining. With all that complexity, how does somebody first get started thinking about whether or not they're going to work with an outfit like blockchain?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I have a particular vetting process that I've used for over 20 years. And before I get involved in a board and a company, it's a similar recipe borrowed from the traditional venture capital community. First, I look at the people and the team first. So it's not technology first, it's people and team first. Secondarily, I then go to outside industry experts, typically consultants. They're more honest with me what's really going on in a particular vertical than if I were to first approach the company directly with a solution or new technology. And the third thing that I do is prove out the business use case with a return on investment. So I go and actually meet with anywhere from 6 to 12 prospects. We actually walk through the use case of what the new technology will do and what the hard ROI is. So I'll walk you through an example of that, if that's okay.
Sure.
So one of the startups is in the fintech arena. They're going to be doing a distributed ledger technology, based upon blockchain. And it is going to get rid of, clunky back office processes is the ROI. And we know that the payoff after, implementing this technology is going to be a 6-month ROI for the global 2000 banks and corporates that are going to be using this. So this is a perfect example of even before major funding happened in this particular startup, the use case, the ROI, actually the customer base and prospects were all lined up. Now the capital is coming in, the dev team is building everything out, and in essence, you have your roadmap to sales immediately without having to guess what your business model is.
No, that's great. I'm going to challenge a point you made just in the beginning on how your vetting process works. And I'm going to challenge it because we had a show with Jedediah Yue, who is a Silicon Valley icon and also wrote a book recently called Disrupt or Die, and about how anyone can learn from the startup process in Silicon Valley in order to disrupt their business model. And so Jed was a strong proponent that the old way of doing the full vetting process, which was we know the people are the most important thing. The people are definitely the most important thing, but sometimes, like in blockchain, there's now newcomers such as those that Jonathan are advising that don't have a commercial track record, but they have a huge track record in the academic community. They might have been behind some of the key core technologies that Bitcoin is built on top of. So we get with the banking use case you just talked about, how you've got those that are industry veterans and they've kind of run alongside that. Why don't you explain how those industry veterans can first meet up the technologists, those unknown blockchain gurus?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that point at all. So again, I think you have to separate out business models and brand new technologies and technologists. So most certainly blockchain and a lot of the solutions that are being built around blockchain, it's, you know, like the first time to the moon. So what you do to marry the two is you have to put your faith on the technology side as far as something being built and delivered, but it gives the team, the technologist, as well as the business confidence that it's going to succeed, again, when you know you have a business use case. So again, either taking out costs, saving money, or making money, right? It's the same economic principles that have been around for years and years.
Yeah, it's just getting the ROI to the business based on whatever the solution is. You know, it's the fact that you've decided to put auto opening and closing trash cans in, perhaps, that you know, that saves 13 seconds in a day for one person. You know, I'm being silly, but it's actually that kind of consideration, because you can go that basic from the standpoint of automating a process per se, so that you save time.
Right. So there's a real world example to this. So a second company that I'm involved with, they do autonomous forklifts and pallet jacks. That's the business model. That's what the company does. Mm-hmm. There is a blockchain component to this, in which there are smart contracts between parties, and it is solving a problem for click to collect in the retail world. So the real world is you order something online, it's then delivered to, let's just say, your local large retailer. You show up and they can't find it in the back of the warehouse. That's an actual big problem. Returns are a huge problem for the large retailers in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So this solves it in not only autonomously unloading and, you know, offloading goods from hundreds of trucks that are pulling up, you know, think of it a large store, but it is recording within blockchain the geolocation, the FedEx or UPS delivery receipt, etc. So in essence, in real time, any store manager or retail clerk that is helping the person can actually physically locate exactly where that item was dropped off in the back of the store. It's perfect. So That's an example of a win-win. It's using brand new technology. There's a brand new technologist, right, building this. These are all, you know, PhDs right out of college. But there is the old business use case I always go back to.
Right.
Great. And, you know, Arnie, you briefly mentioned smart contracts at the beginning of talking about your investments. Really quick, like within 1 minute, what's a smart contract?
Yeah. So a smart contract is where you have known parties and entities, so a known buyer and a known seller, and they have all, I will call it the legal T's and E's, so terms and conditions, between the trade of good or services between those two parties. So to me, that's a smart contract.
Great. And we'll dive a little bit more back when we get back from the break.
Yeah, so make sure that if you have questions or concerns or comments about this particular subject, we'd like to hear from you. You can reach out to us toll-free at 888-828-7846. That's 828-SVIN, or Silicon Valley Insider at svin.biz, and we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider with your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. And today in the studio with us, we have a special guest, Arnie Markoff, who has been in the industry in Silicon Valley, actually, for 20-plus years and is helping companies grow. He leads their sales organizations, and he's involved with a number of startups, including blockchain startups. We had just started talking about a company he's involved with that's revolutionizing the retail warehousing space using blockchain, and we were talking about smart contracts. So, Arnie, thanks for the explanation of smart contracts. We were you were explaining how it gives a lot of autonomy between buyer and seller. I think of the example that at some point you're going to have like a 12-year-old girl in China who develops her own clothing brand and being able to distribute that anywhere in the world via the blockchain process. What else do you think about in terms of what's revolutionary about smart contracts?
Yeah. Well, it is, you know, to use that example of 12-year-old designing clothing in China, it creates transparency. So one of the startups, Product Block, that I'm involved with, they're building e-commerce solutions on top of blockchain technologies. And if you think of it, is she could upload her entire product design catalog into this type of technology. And Product Block then has hooks into, you know, Amazon, eBay, and a lot of the other seller platforms. So you actually get to control your whole product line with one solution. So in other words, instead of having to sign up with five or six vendors, have to worry about things like is it real or not? Is it a forged product or not? Especially in clothing and design, right?
Sure. Yeah, designer products.
Product Block and that technology set is going to allow the transparency as well as the validation from even the small 12-year-old designer. And that's the beautiful thing about it. You're in essence giving tools that were only available to people like, think of it like a Walmart or a Gap retailer. And you're putting it in the hands of a 12-year-old in China to manage her entire product set. And that's the beautiful thing about it.
How do you think it is beautiful, but how do you think that companies like Amazon, like Walmart, are reacting to this type of technology? Are they embracing it, or are they fearful of it, or they don't know what to make of it yet?
Most certainly they're embracing it. Amazon has announced Amazon Coins. You also have Walmart. Walmart publicly is developing their own internal blockchain solution. So they have customized their order management system for both, you know, e-commerce, so Walmart.com, as well as across all of their stores internationally. And I see them building blockchain solutions to go hand in hand too with their largest suppliers like a Procter & Gamble.
So then how does a Product Block fit in that ecosystem?
So Product Block, I would say, wouldn't sell to Walmart. They're you know, obviously a 800-pound gorilla and have a handle on their own solutions. They want to keep it very secretive because that's a competitive advantage. So Product Block is really aiming its solution, you know, downstream to tier two retailers all the way down to, again, the example, it could be a teenage fashion designer. And they would be able to use the platform and the solution set that way without having to have their own complex IT team, as well as, you know, we have to talk about there is a shortage in the marketplace of blockchain technologists.
Right.
So these companies, very similar to 12 years ago when Hadoop and open source technologies were all the rage, there simply aren't a lot of technologists that have these projects under their belt, have built these solutions, and Product Block is rolling out these solutions, and you can leverage that in our team versus trying to hire and build it yourself.
So in essence, you're complementary to any one of these retail platforms.
Absolutely.
And that you can enable the, you know, we used to say mom and pop, and now we're saying, you know, little boys and girls who've got ideas. You're enabling that channel for them via your technology.
That's absolutely correct.
Great.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it becomes kind of a challenging situation from the standpoint of, like, we're talking about the young people. You know, somebody who's there's always the success stories of the 12-year-old or the 15-year-old who's developed his or her own app on the, you know, the app store for Apple, for example, whether it's a game or actually a utilitarian tool. This sounds like it's ripe for that kind of consideration, where some of these younger people who are starting to become technologists in their own right may start to glom on to the blockchain considerations and figure out a way to become an advanced blockchain person by the time they're 18 or something like that. Sounds like a realistic opportunity.
I agree. It's realistic. If you have a child entering college too, and they want to learn programming, this is most certainly going to be a hot space for hiring over the next 6 to 12 years.
Yeah, you alluded to the open source revolution a couple of years ago, and I know we both lived it and are living it today in a certain extent, but it's definitely one of those situations where I think there's so much unknown so far. With this, there's a lot of opportunities for expansion and growth, and the blockchain consideration is a different way of approaching it. And our show that we did off the blockchain when we had Doug Park on, we described how, you know, a blockchain actually works, and that's actually above and beyond what we're talking about today, because we're talking about the smart contract consideration, and I do want to come back to that and what that advantage is when you talk about the fact that there's a human factor that's now effectively removed from a smart contract.
Correct. You know, you're removing inefficiencies for back office operations, especially if you're looking at the finance department, would be, you know, one of the departments impacted by this type of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think going taking a look at blockchain, there needs to be focus on what I would just consider the UI and UX, because ultimately humans and people have to use it to be successful across any organization. And I think that there for any startup in this space, if they also think about a UI UX and how it's actually going to get used. So this is, you know, people on either a mobile phone or a tablet, but they need to think about really how it's going to get used.
Right.
From a UI UX perspective, because there aren't a lot of solutions out there today, but I think it's a tremendous opportunity.
So you're talking about like the front end impact as well as each capability. I mean, I realize what UI UX is, and I just want to kind of, for those of us in the audience who don't necessarily understand all the technical ins and outs, a mobile app that has a good interface that's intuitive for a user to use. And what you're talking about is how we get into where that fits in terms of these blockchain type technologies.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So just one point of education. We did talk about this with the Park on off the blockchain with Park and Dubaj, that there are different types of tokens when we talk about blockchain. A lot of interest comes into Bitcoin, which is a cryptocurrency or crypto token, but there's also the delineation between security tokens and utility tokens. And a security token is simply thinking of what comes out of a blockchain and issuing of tokens as something that's tradable as an asset. And a lot of what we talk about regulations and concerns are around these two types of use cases. But what we're really talking about with product block and a lot of today's show is around utility token, which is, you know, frankly, I think ripe for revolution in the industry, all industries, and what people don't think as much about. When we talk about the 12-year-old girl who can develop her own business in China and have a distribution channel without any of the typical middle intermediaries, that's just a phenomenal process. And we know that this is happening over and over in other parts of the world. I think the other point of education that we really want to impart on you is that although there's a lot of buzz on blockchain and there's a lot of companies starting up and doing things on blockchain, at this point, there's a very finite number of actually qualified blockchain developers, and there's an even smaller number, 10% of them, that actually can innovate on blockchain itself. So we just really caution those folks who want to dip their toe in blockchain technology, whether you're a startup or an investor, you really have to do your homework. And if you have any questions about that, you should give us a ring.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to kind of reiterate that point, Keith, that there are a lot of people out there who claim they know what they're doing. And by no means does that make them an expert on everything blockchain. So beware, do your due diligence. We have a vetting framework that we use when we talk to people. And of course, that's one of the reasons why we brought Arnie onto the show today. It's important to do a lot deeper dive into this, because the considerations here are a paradigm shift for most people. You're talking about taking hard currency, potentially, when you're talking about the security token or the coin, and you're talking about converting that to something that is not tangible in a lot of cases.
That's correct. One of the startups we've been talking about I'm involved in, Product Block, We're still actually on the fence of doing an ICO offering versus a traditional venture capital round funding.
Let me clarify. Sorry to interrupt. Let me clarify. ICO, initial coin offering.
Yes, initial coin offering for ICO. So, you know, what I learned, especially going into 2018, is I was really naive with ICO and the regulatory parts and risk around it. So I actually met with Doug, who you had on your show. I've also met with two of the top law firms in Palo Alto with their blockchain experts. And going into 2018, a ICO offering is going to be as much regulatory and legal paperwork as doing a traditional equity offering and raise.
So the SEC is actually going to potentially come in and regulate that as one option?
Yes.
Okay.
And there was just an announcement today that, you know, the SEC has shut down trading of two ICO-based offerings simply because of, I would say, the risk to the public.
Okay. Yeah. So obviously, Arnie, there's a lot more depth to this. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation a little bit more. I want us to kind of get also to the crowd sale consideration, if we can talk about that too. I know that's part and parcel to one of the offerings that you guys are working with. And now you've described it may be something that you're taking a step back on. But let's describe what that's all about. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. You can reach us toll free at 888-828-7846. That's toll free, 888-828-SVIN. Or reach out to us at svin.biz. We'll see you in a few minutes.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Once again, welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm Keith Koo, your host, with my co-host Jonathan Ziegler. And we've been talking to our guest, Arnie Markoff, who is an industry veteran who's been investing his time and energy with a number of startups, a number of those which are blockchain startups. And right before the break, Arnie had mentioned about why one of the blockchain startups he's been working with, why they're reconsidering their ICO or initial coin offering sale. And before we get into that, he had referenced a story that was just late-breaking as of this morning, which was that the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, completely shut down a small cap that is related to blockchain. It's called Crypto Company. And if we, you know, compare this to Tulip Mania in the Netherlands back in, the 1600s or earlier, this small cap has gone up 2,700% in the last few months, most of that in the last 30 days, and they're worth $11 billion. The kind of outrageousness of the small cap is that it all started, they're calling themselves a crypto company, it all started when they bought a retail clothing company that specializes in sports bras.
Yeah, that was the CEO was featured as being like one of those gentlemen who just reverse merged a company or something to that effect. And then the investment became the Bitcoin consideration and it just exploded from there, if I recall. I read this article a couple of weeks ago that they were already investigating him and he was coming out not saying a word.
Yeah, well, initially he was kind of cavalier, but we just wanted to highlight back to in our last segment, we're talking about the opportunity and the dangers, almost the Wild West nature of blockchain and cryptocurrencies. So Arnie, Product Block was setting themselves up to be, in essence, a crowd sale. So can you talk about what a crowd sale is?
Sure. So I think everyone is familiar with apps like GoFundMe. So it could be people raising $500 or even $1,000, but it's actual cash. Then in return for that, they give these early investors a portion of the company. And a crowd sale within blockchain and internet coin offering, think of it as similar to that, where people put in real money. They are then issued a cryptocurrency that is around the solution. And in essence, as that solution grows, you're going to have more and more value to the currency, and that's how they're going to get a return on their investment. So it's another avenue of funding a company outside of the traditional, think of it, venture capital world.
Right. And what's interesting is that you invested all that time and energy, you and your company, in doing the crowd sale, and now you're kind of second-guessing or reconsidering that. And I think that's because, and wisely so, just the very fluid nature of the regulatory environment. I spoke at a conference, a private investor conference last week, and you know, to summarize this all-evening event, the investors were really concerned about where we're headed in blockchain and cryptocurrency, fintech, Internet of Things, because of just the insecure nature of those devices. And we did a show called IoT and Security. And also anything related to cannabis, where California as a state has legalized that, but it's not legalized at a federal level. So, and we're just summarizing all of that as where Silicon Valley, and we also talked about another show, has always enjoyed the ability to be innovative, but in a less regulated environment than, say, banking or insurance or energy. The investor community is starting to worry about that, and that's what we're talking about. So let's go back to halting the ICO thought for your company.
Sure. So the primary driver of that is twofold. One, going into 2018, I am firmly convinced in talking to all the legal experts here in the Valley that, again, you're going to have the same regulatory paperwork headache doing a ICO offering as a traditional equity offering, even think of it as a IPO stock offering. There's going to be the same amount of headache and paperwork involved, and time and paperwork effort for that. So that was one thing which was really a surprise to me. I was naive on that, and I learned after talking to the experts, which is great. The second is really once too that our solution set got built out, there didn't need to be a public facing coin offering part of that. It was going to be more of a private peer-to-peer solution that we're building out. And unless your ICO is interwoven and intertwined into your solution set that you're delivering, then I would actually recommend don't do the ICO offering and go for a more traditional route of your fundraising. Then you can keep it private. You can keep the regulators, in essence, off your back. Go to market more readily, faster, and gain that market share. Because, again, a lot of this is really about execution. And at the end, in advising these startups, I want the fastest path to execution.
All right. Well, with Arnie, with that, we're out of time. So thank you very much for being with us today and going through smart contract utility tokens. We will be doing a future show with one of our companies that actually decided never to go ICO and to just go straight to a direct offering. Just a reminder that the Programmatic World Forum is coming up on January 25th. Come to our website, svin.biz, for a discount. Just enter code SVIN20.
All right. Thank you again, Arnie, for joining us today. And thanks for listening. Our show is broadcast every Friday from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock on KDOW. And we welcome any comments or any concerns. Or if you'd like to appear as a guest on Silicon Valley Insider, give us a call toll free at 888-828-7846 or 888-828-SVIN. Or reach out to us on the web at svin.biz. That's Silicon Valley IN Insider.biz. And we'll be back next week. Thanks for joining.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. For questions or comments on today's program, or to schedule a complimentary consultation with Keith or Jonathan about your business, call 1-888-828-SVIN. That's 1-888-828-7846. 888-828-SVIN. Be sure to listen again.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.